The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Monday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course the DraftKings Network. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. By the way, shout out to the always delightful Vegas chump for getting a VSiN app out of my intro. I kept saying VSiN app for a while. Just out of robotics.
That should probably be on me to recognize things like that. No, I did not at all.
No, we got it for that. On the show today, a little of everything. By the way, good morning to you, sir. You good?
I'm great. How are you? How are you?
I'm awesome.
Hey, how was your weekend?
I'm going to answer it like a human does. It was lovely. Thank you. It was relaxing. Yeah.
Did you stay away from the winds? The harsh winds of Las Vegas?
Oh, can we talk about that for a second?
Yeah.
So, you know, they have Indian Wells, like tennis's de facto fifth major, which starts in the desert here on Wednesday. Drew Densick and I doing a Beating the Book podcast on it tomorrow afternoon. I hope the winds there are not like they are here or don't persist till Wednesday, because Saturday, Kelly, this is no exaggeration, could not leave my building on the Aria side. So I live right in the middle city center. There's a U essentially that is shaped by the Aria, by where I live, and by the Waldorf. And the wind swirls there.
Yeah.
And if you're about $175 or less, you would have been blown into the strip and you would have been run over by a car. And I'm not even exaggerating. Like, literally, your legs are taken up from under you, to the point we have pools on the tops of our buildings. The water from the pools got blown to the ground level.
Oh, my God. That is crazy.
That is how harsh the winds were this weekend. That was unbelievable. Never happened before.
Yeah, I was in a strip property Friday night where I was up top, and I was like, you could feel the building swaying, which is the creepiest feeling in the world.
Ours are already slanted.
I'm like, if I had a few drinks, there's the building moving. No, the building's moving.
Not
okay,
a good
cool.
feeling.
Yeah, great.
We got Matty Cox coming on to talk college basketball. Conference tournaments begins today. Well, one conference tournament does. The Atlantic Sun. We'll talk to him about all conference tournament futures, those that are up, meaning this week's that are up. Schedule's kind of the same this week as it is every year, and then it shifts a little next week, but all the big ones, of course, next week. Joe Sheehan to talk some MLB season win totals with us. Mike Somich will join us from the handle. We'll also talk to Michael Montesano, who won the Booby Prize in circa millions, but is also a huge college basketball head. We'll talk to him a little later on the show. Want to start with our weekly college basketball formula update. I know it feels like we do it more than once a week. Sometimes someone on Twitter will ask about it as an update, but we do it once a week. And with less than 2 weeks till Selection Sunday, Kelly, this is shaping up to be one of the more interesting qualifying years of all time in this. What do I mean by that? More teams than I think ever before potentially will qualify for this in any other given year. Let's get into it. For those who aren't familiar, we've done this every year. We've been on the air every year, the Beating the Book podcast and the Betting Dork before that. Here's the formula. Last 33 champs had more assists than turnovers. 32 of the last 33 had a head coach with Sweet 16. Oh, pardon me. 31 of the last 33 had a head coach with Sweet 16 experience prior to the tournament. 2014 UConn Huskies head coach Kevin Ollie, and last year's UConn Huskies coach Dan Hurley being the exceptions. 27 of the last 28 champs went to the tournament with at least 3 wins versus teams in the top 10% of RPI. That's how long we've been doing this. And by the way, that was a huge win for Creighton over Marquette, because now they qualify, or at least that particular bullet point, they now qualify on with that win. Last 28 champs had a top 75 strength of schedule. 20 of the last 21 champs were in the top 20 in adjusted offensive efficiency at KenPom. 2014 UConn Huskies were the exception there. And 20 of the last 21 champs were in the top 20 in adjusted defensive efficiency. The only non-UConn tick of an exception in this whole thing, Baylor finished 22nd in adjusted defensive efficiency in 2021. Here are the teams that currently qualify. You ready for this? 6 currently qualify, Kelly.
Whoa.
With 2 knocking at the door, we literally could have 8 teams qualifying for this. The point of this whole exercise, by the way, is that for as absolute pandemonium and mayhem and chaos that is March Madness in terms of rounds 1, rounds 2, maybe even into the Sweet 16 round, deciphering an actual eventual champion based on this formula actually isn't that hard at all, except for when you might have a year like this. If you end up with anywhere between 6 to 8 teams, this might not help us out all that much. It doesn't really winnow it down as much as it has in previous years. Here are the current qualifiers. These teams are in as qualifying to win the national championship. Houston, they are a qualifier, 13th adjusted offense, first in adjusted defense. UConn, no surprise, they're the defending champs, fourth in adjusted offense at KenPom, 17th in adjusted defense. They qualify on all other in all other categories as well. Arizona, 6th and 14th, respectively, adjusted offense and defense. Auburn, 14th and 5th, adjusted offense and defense, respectively. Tennessee is now in. Big win over Bama yesterday, and really wasn't a Dalton Connect game. Tennessee, 17th adjusted offense, 3rd in adjusted defense. And Marquette, 19th and 18th, even after having lost to Creighton. They are in. Who are the two teams on the outside just looking in? The aforementioned Creighton team, 12th and 22nd adjusted defense. But Creighton did get their third win against the top 10% RPI, so that one sloughs off. So they are just on the doorstep, as is Purdue, 2nd in adjusted offense, 21st in adjusted defense at KenPom. Duke can't get there based on the Sweet 16 criteria. John Shire hasn't coached a Sweet 16 before, his team into the Sweet 16, obviously, before. And UNC a little further out, Carolina 26th in adjusted offense. But you have 6 in, Kelly.
That's wild.
2 literally on the doorstep. We've never had in the history of this formula 8 ever qualify before March Madness. We are 13 days away from Selection Sunday.
Well, and they, I mean, you could even bring it back to last year, too, right? I mean, you keep bringing up Hurley, but that is, so Duke is kind of in that same situation right now, right?
Except UConn is the kryptonite. Nobody.
Right. But yeah,
UConn is the kryptonite of this formula.
Yeah, we could be sitting here second weekend, though, and then Duke all of a sudden becomes a qualifier.
If that happens, we might have to remove that. If you have 2 exceptions, is fine. But if you have 3,
you might need to change it into before the tournament starts, where you cut it off or something.
Well, that one is always before the tournament starts. The only things that can change mid tournament are the adjusted offense and defense.
Gotcha.
Now, that's the update on the college basketball formula. NBA last night. I bring this up because we had Drew Dinsick on last week, and I made a point to talk to him about the conundrum that is the Phoenix Suns. If Phoenix gets to the postseason, what would the pricing be on them if they faced a team, and we specifically ended up against the Thunder? We just hypothetically came up with that because, you know, if a team like the Suns and their big three get to a postseason series, that the market would go crazy, and maybe the market would even make the Suns a slight favorite over the Thunder. Now, last night we got this matchup. There was no Devin Booker. That needs to be pointed out. And the Thunder end up beating the Suns as 4.5-point favorites on the road. Suns, Booker-less, 118-110 in a game where Shea did it again. Shea with 35. He scored 30 points now, at least 30, in 46 of the Thunder's 60 games. We are at the quarter pole basically now. I know some teams have played 61, some have played 60, some have played 59, but we're essentially at the quarter pole now. Thunder led this game by over 20 points. They were rolling in this game. They got punched in the mouth. The Suns came all the way back to take the lead, and the Thunder, as cool as could be, with Shea just running the point at 6'6 so efficiently, unbelievable handle in small areas in the key. You were saying off air, like, how many of those shots does he miss? Like, someone track that percentage.
Yeah, he's automatic. Elbow jumper, automatic.
Elbow jumper.
It's incredible.
I just got a kick out of Doris Burke saying J-Dub 55 times. That was really why I wanted to win. And the Thunder take that blow, and they win it 118-110. And I was texting with Drew a little last night. I was like, well, thank goodness Booker wasn't playing here, right? Because otherwise this would have killed a possibility of this potential series and how we could exploit this price in the playoffs. But the Thunder now, ladies and gentlemen, are the number one seed. Again, quarter pole, still 22 games left to play. They are currently, the Oklahoma City Thunder, in a just glut of great teams in the West, are currently the number one in the number one position by a half game over both the T-Wolves and the Nuggets. It's amazing.
Let's go. Let's go.
It's amazing.
Keep it rolling, OKC. I got some awards that need to get home. I got things that win total just got home. That got home. Over win total cash. That was from preseason. I noticed that last night. I mean, I figured that one was going to get there, but you know how you don't really track those? I was like, oh, yeah. 42. I believe that is the over on my win total. All right, good.
I still don't think they're winning the title, but man, when you watch them play every time, you're more impressed than the previous.
I mean, Nurkic had 31 rebounds against him.
31 boards. Right. That's not even the headline. 31 boards.
And you still are able to overcome that and win a game. How many times do you just see teams disappear in moments like that? When you are just being destroyed by one guy on the boards. I know there was a lot that came out of this game, too. Yes, I thought Dort on Durant was it felt like playoff level defense they were letting go.
Durant had no answers.
Durant couldn't do anything with Lou Dort on him. Was he getting fouled? Yeah, maybe sometimes. Yeah. Whatever. Nurkic complaining about getting fouled. That dude is slamming his like 300-pound body into poor Chet Holmgren. I'm like, Chet, like he felt like Rocky out there. It was like, get up off the mat again. Get up off the mat, Chet. Like how many times he was getting shoved to the ground by Nurkic.
Nurkic is 31 boards.
Yeah.
You know how many of them? You know what the most rebounds in a game since 1983-84 is?
I have no idea. I thought to look this up last night. I didn't go look it up. I am 38, and it's by Andre Drummond. I'm going to guess.
35, just four more than Nurkic had last night. Charles Oakley. AKA okay. Jeff Benson on Twitter.
Okay.
Most rebounds ever in an NBA game. Do you have any idea?
No idea.
Wilt
with how many?
Wilt had 55 in a game 2 years before he scored on.
Maybe be on notice tonight for this same situation as the Thunder visit the Lakers. AD, you might have a big night.
Yeah. Let's talk about the number one seed and some of these awards, MVP and beyond in the NBA. That's next. Numbers Game, VEASAN, the Sports Betting Network.
Numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. See what I did there? Again, shout out to the always lovely and delightful Vegas chump for making that correction for me. We'll get to the NFC division odds coming up. We'll also hear from Mike Somich. Mike Somich has a couple college basketball plays. You know what else he has, Kelly? A couple hockey plays.
Samo bomb. That's all I want
to
say.
After he does every one of those picks, you have to get him to go Samo bomb.
I feel like you have to.
You have to do that. A little later on, Michael Montesano, who won the Circa Millions Booby Prize, but also is a big college basketball head. He's got college basketball thoughts. He's got NBA awards thoughts as well. We will get into that. Joe Sheehan standing by to talk MLB season win totals with us. First, though, we get tweets. We get texts. This text is from Fezzik, the only back-to-back winner of the Hilton Super Contest back in the day. I was just talking about how I like the Bengals as my favorite bet in the AFC of all those division plays. He texts, Bengals three last place field games. So what he means by that, again, are not within division, but schedule dictated out of division games. Three last place games, Carolina, Tennessee, New England. They have an enormous advantage since the three other AFC North teams have to play three games versus good, decent teams. But the Bengals get those three cupcakes. So add that to that mix.
Nice. There we go.
There you go.
That's backing it up a little bit more. I like it. Yeah. That's one I'm interested to see where what numbers we get as soon as they're released in town. Yeah. In roughly three months.
Yeah. By the time we get them, it won't be anywhere close to this price. Because when Nevada gets legalized sports betting. Woo! Oh, boy.
Watch out.
We might not even show up to work. It's going to be so exciting. Ladies and gentlemen, let's talk some Major League Baseball season win totals with a gentleman who is the author of the Joe Sheehan newsletter. And he joins us now from, we just determined he is not in Australia. That's what we determined off air. The Joe Sheehan Baseball newsletter, by the way. And Joe Sheehan joins us now. How you doing, Joe? Great to see you, man.
Good, Gil. What's going on, man?
Doing very well. It's your time of year, man. It's happening. Your excitement level for the upcoming baseball season? 11 on the Spinal Tap amplifier?
Pretty excited. I mean, all of these seasons the last few years have started out weird. You had the pandemic, you had the lockout, you had the rules changes. this feels like the first season. We don't have this massive thing hanging over it for a while. So I think this is a time in baseball where you've got all of this incredible young talent. We saw a lot of it come up last year. Now you've got guys like Jackson Merrill, Jackson Holliday, Jackson Churio, and even players who aren't named Jackson set to make an impact.
Even those. All right. Without further ado, let's start with one. I know you have three of these coming. Give me your first season win total that you love.
Yeah, I gave this out at 83.5 a couple weeks ago. It's actually moved up to 84.5 with the Bellinger signing. I think the Cubs are incredibly undervalued right now. You've got a team that basically played to about an 88-89 win skill level last year. Of course, they lost a lot of one-run games, had a lot of close games. They missed the playoffs by a game. But the baseline talent was always there to win the division. Now, you look at them this year, and they retained Bellinger. They haven't really gone out and improved a lot, but where their improvement's going to come from is internally. The Cubs had a lot of problems under the Theo Epstein, Jed Hoyer management developing their own pitching. They had about a five-year stretch where they've got almost no innings at all from homegrown pitching. But you look at the team this year, and you've got, in addition to the frontline starters that they have, you look at the rotation. Justin Steele had the great year last year. You look at Jameson Taillon, I think, is going to have a comeback. But Hayden Wisniewski, Jordan Wicks, Cade Horton, Ben Brown, they have internal depth that hasn't really been there for them in recent years. They've gone out. The bullpen's actually going to be a strength for them. Javier Assad's going to be out there. They traded for a kid from the Dodgers named Yency Almonte is going to help them. I see a depth there that's going to help them in two ways. One, obviously, you can use these guys to get through a season. But also, when we get to midseason and we start talking about the trade deadline and going out and making improvements, the Cubs are going to be as well positioned as anybody to make those additions. And one of the things I like to look at when I'm talking about season win totals is not just how does this team look now, but how is this team going to look after the deadline on August 1st? I think the Cubs are going to get better as the season goes on. So I really love this number.
Yes. And would they more likely be a buyer or seller as that trade deadline approaches?
Yep.
Exactly. That corroborates my. That was the Cubs over is my second favorite season win total. I love that you're on them. I mentioned Seiya Suzuki as well, right? Monster second half of last year, 938 OPS. So a lot to look forward to with the Cubbies this year. Okay, number two, sir.
The Guardians, and this is a little bit of a history thing. The Guardians basically just haven't been bad in the last decade, and the big change they made, of course, is Terry Francona retiring. Turning the reins over to Stephen Vogt. Now, this isn't a reason to make this pick. I have to be honest with you. This has me a little bit nervous. Stephen Vogt was, 18 months ago, Stephen Vogt hit a home run. I mean, he was playing that recently.
That's amazing. Yeah.
And he has no dugout experience. It's very risky. And we've seen teams do this. You know, Walt Weiss a couple of years back basically got pulled off the street. The Yankees pulled Aaron Boone out of the broadcast booth and gave him a managerial job. So this is kind of a thing. Teams are saying, if we like the guy enough, we don't care about the experience. But I look at the Guardians, I look at an incredibly weak division still, even though the Royals have gotten a little better, the Tigers have gotten a little better. I look at last year with the injuries to Shane Bieber, Tristan McKenzie, they had to bring up a lot of young starters. Tanner Bibee pitched well, Gavin Williams, Logan Allen. So now you get McKenzie and Bieber back, and you've got this really strong five-man rotation where, to me, you know, Allen's the worst of the five, and he's basically a league average starter. The bullpen should be good. Again, this is where we're going to learn a lot about Vogt, whether he's actually able to run that bullpen the way Francona did. Concerns always with the Guardians about whether they're going to hit. They traded for a Rays prospect named Kyle Manzardo at last year's trade deadline. He's somebody who's going to hit for average, hit some doubles, kind of the Wally Joyner, Mark Brace type. Doesn't look like those guys, but that's kind of hitter he's going to be. A lot of it for me, Gil, though, is just it's the division. The White Sox are going to be the worst or the second worst team in baseball. And even though we've balanced the schedules a little bit, it's still 52 games within the division. It's 39 games against the White Sox, Tigers, and Royals. So I look at all of this, and I think the Guardians, actually, to me, they're the favorite in the division ahead of the Twins because I just don't trust the Twins' pitching depth. So I think 500 is the baseline for them. So I've actually got about 2.5 wins of cushion between where I think they're going to land and where the number is.
Yeah, I think you can make the case for Jose Ramirez being a good MVP play at his current number as well.
Yep.
You terrified the four 14-year-old girls who listen to this show who happened to be in their dad's car when you said Justin Bieber got hurt. I just want to point that out. The other, the Stephen Vogt thing, though, is that we shouldn't just gloss over that. Like the Guardians said, the Guardians brass said they knew within 5 minutes of talking to him that he was their manager. Do you ever remember anything equivalent to this before?
Not really. Like I say, that's the kind of thing you say after the fact because you want to really sell it. So I don't want to put too much weight in that. But again, we've seen this where guys have gotten basically pulled off the street to manage it. It's a mixed bag because, generally, I mean, you're not going to have total randoms. They're not going to do that with total randoms. Stephen Vogt, as a player, was well-respected.
Yes.
He was somebody talked about as a future manager. It's not like they're giving the job to Kelly or something. You know, it's a...
Jeez. Wow.
It's just... I personally prefer to have managers who've had some experience in the dugout, who've had some experience getting through a season that way. And I just, that's my one concern with this team. And, you know, Rocco Baldelli, just pick the other relevant team in the division. I have a lot of respect for Baldelli. I think he's somebody who didn't have a ton of managerial experience, but had a little bit. I believe he was a minor league manager when he took over the Twins. And I think that's an edge the Twins have in this division. But I look at the talent base, particularly on the pitching side, I think that will overcome.
No one manages bullpen arms like Kelly Bidlin, Joe.
Hey, if that kid in Little Big League can do it, I can do it, okay?
All right, one last one. What do you got?
Yeah, I mentioned the Cubs earlier last year playing to a baseline higher than their total wins. The Padres actually had the largest gap in baseball. The Padres were basically a 90-win team last year, but they were 1-13 in one run in the extra inning games, like 5-82 or something. And I don't have these numbers in front of me, guys. Forget it. But their one run and extra inning record was among the worst in baseball history. Now, granted, they traded Soto for pitching. That's a loss, but that's a loss based on their. So if you look at them as a 90 win team, okay, now they're an 85 win team, as opposed to, okay, well, they were an 83 win team and now they look like a 78 win team. So you've got to start from that higher baseline when we're talking about this. Now, there's some risk involved in this. Pitching depth is a question. You know, they got exposed last year when Darvish and Musgrove got hurt. They went out and traded for a lot of back-end pitching, Randy Vasquez and Johnny Brito, Drew Thorpe, and all of those guys came over in that Yankees trade. And the bullpen should still be good, even without Hayter. They went out and got Yuki Matsui from NPB, Woo Suk Go from the Korean League. Typically, relievers coming over from Asia have hit the ground running. So I think there will be improvements in that bullpen, at least for 2024. I'm not sure how long they'll stay that way. But there's been a lot of successive relievers coming over. So I think that's going to be a strength for them. You know, Mike Schilt, obviously he's got a winning track record with the Cardinals. I'm not sure how much he had to do with that. Not a great tactical manager, not particularly good at running a bullpen. So there's some concern there to fall off from Melvin. But again, I'm talking about a team that was basically a 90-win team last year, and I'm getting them at 81.5. I just really love that number.
Joe, it is my single favorite season win total. What you just said, you and I did not talk before this. We did not plan this. We agree on that. By the way, the Padres 2-12 in extra inning games alone last year, 2-12.
Right. But it was like 0-12 on September 15th. I think they won
right.
The last two.
That's right. Which again, that alone, you turn that around and it was a different story, but yes, based on, Pythag, based on sequencing, they were really a better team than what they finished in the standings to begin with. And again, as you said, you're not asking them to win 100 games. You're not asking them to win 90. You're just asking them to go above 500 here to cash this one. Joe, great talking to you. Great seeing you. Enjoy the season. We'll talk many times, sir.
Thanks, Neil. Take care.
Joe Sheehan, everybody, the author of the Joe Sheehan Baseball Newsletter. You can find out all the information about that on his X feed at Joe_Sheehan.
Joe's
took
awesome.
Took a little shot at you about the being.
Oh,
the
he's
manager.
Allowed to. Joe's allowed to. We love Joe. He's one of those people. Every time we hear him, I'm like, I should be smarter on the sports I talk
he's
about.
He's awesome. He's awesome. We love him. We'll come back. We had so much fun talking AFC. We'll talk NFC division next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
This week on DraftKings Sportsbook, new customers can deposit $5, get a no-sweat bet up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet loses. That, again, is a no-sweat bet up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet loses. Download the app and use promo code VSiN, that's VSIN, when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin. Kelly, it's so funny, the stuff we say that locks into people on Twitter. Good friend Shillionaire. Good friend Shillionaire. Sign up pronounced arm swing Kelly for any job that includes walking, especially walking to the mound.
Oh, man. Yeah.
He does. I got to say it again. Pronounced arm
swing. You get a little anger in the arm swing, too. Yeah. Because that speeds you up. You know, you walk a little faster.
Again, for those who missed it, if I happen to catch Kelly on the way in about, you know, like by the escalators here, it's a contact sport walking next to him.
I'm going to guess my restroom walk during breaks, or it's even more pronounced. get there a little quicker.
You propels know? You forward.
Exactly.
This gentleman, ladies and gentlemen, won the Circa Millions Booby Prize back in 2021. I believe that was the year. I won $100,000 for finishing with the worst record. But while doing that, not only is he able to bizarro sharp his NFL, he's very sharp at college basketball and pro as well. It's Michael Montesano. How you doing, Mike?
Very good. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Let's start with pro basketball. Let's start with a couple awards. You have some very defined thoughts on a couple awards. You want to start with most improved player?
Yeah, we'll go into the most improved markets. Full disclosure, at the end of October, I did take Tyrese Maxey at plus 450 for most improved, and I just kind of just left it there. And, you know, what I like to do is to go into the markets, look at the odds, and just kind of then go in and see what the actual numbers that the players are performing at, just see if it kind of correlates. Well, I just went into the Maxey and Jalen Williams market, and I'm going to give you some numbers for Tyrese Maxey. This year, his true shooting percentage is 57.5%. His total rebound percentage is 5.5. His assist percentage is 26.5 with a usage of 27.8. So how does that relate into improvement? Well, I just look at the PER from last year. His PER last year was 17.0. It is this year 19.9 with an improvement of 2.9 in his player efficiency rating. His points per game is up 5, and that's, you know, I think when voters, that might be the first and easiest way out to go look, and his points per game is up at 5.7 points per game. When I looked at Jalen Williams, I just shook my head. I mean, and this guy is like 14-1 in the market or 16-1, and this was like a week ago, and he hasn't really moved. His true shooting percentage is 62.6%. His total rebound percentage is 7.1. He does have a little bit of a lower assist percentage than Maxey at 20.7, but his usage percentage is lower at 23.2. His PER last year was 15.6. His PER this year is 18.7. Yes, that is a little bit lower than Maxey's, but his overall numbers, he's plus 3.1, an improvement for his player efficiency rating. His points per game has increased 5.2 points per game. I guess I just don't understand the odds right now. I mean, if this is a most improved award, I mean, these numbers are pretty comparable to each other, and just at minus 650, I just don't see it.
Yeah, I still want you to win your bet, Kelly. I'm just saying the pricing is off.
No, you want me, myself, and Michael to both lose our bets that we already have made.
That is not true. I want you both to cash.
I did make the 14-1 bet on Jalen Williams last week. I did do that. I mean, I will win a lot more if Jalen Williams wins it. Will he win it? I just don't know. I don't know if the voters are going to go in that in depth. I think they're just the easy way out is to give it to Maxey. But now if we're going to go about the team award aspect of it, I mean, Maxey's, I mean, they're like a 6 seed right now. They're going to be in the play-in, probably the participation in the play-in game. And then, you know, OKC is number one. So, I mean, can we add some team aspect to that award? I don't know.
Well, speaking of that, Mike, you've led me right into the trap of defensive player of the year, where Victor Wembanyama's odds are now sneakily, is that a word, 7-1.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, when we look at this award, it's all about what has been done in the past as opposed to what could historically be done coming up. And the easy way out is to say, well, a top three team, we just give it to the best player. I mean, I think that's an easy way out for the voters. But what he's doing right now is something we've never seen before. And if it's something we've never seen before, why is that not taken into consideration? I mean, you're looking at the Spurs last year were dead last in defense, dead last. They have improved. They're up to 24. But if you look at their numbers since, I believe, the end of December, they won that super long losing streak. It's either the middle of December, end of December. Pop's kind of made a schematic change. and he moved Wemby to start guarding more centers, and their defense has kind of taken off. Are they great? No, they're not great, but they have improved. They're about average now since that time. They held the Pacers last night to, you know, the high flying Pacers to a little over 100 points. But his numbers are just dwarfing Gobert's.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about, you know, the defensive player. Okay. I understand his team is not playing well defensively, but if you go to a stat like StatMuse, okay, Minnesota has four players in the top 20 in defensive rating. I don't know how they come up with the ratings. They do have Gobert number one, but they have Wemby number two. Okay. But I mean, why is that not a consideration when you have three or four other of the top defensive players that's helping your team? I guess I know that's up for the voters to decide. I just think we really need to take a long, hard look in the next 2 weeks. I think I said to you, I think this market is going to slowly start creeping down because the word's going to get out with what the numbers that Wemby's putting up is just, it's just something we've never seen before.
I've been beating this drum. I couldn't agree more.
Will he win two awards? Yeah, I don't know.
That's
the
thing.
I don't know if he's going to win two awards.
That's the thing. Do they want to give him two awards? Right. That is always the thing. Human beings. The flawed brains of humans will get in the way of this. All right. Atlantic Sun tournament starts today. It is the first of the conference tournaments. It sort of traditionally is now the first of the tournaments to start. A couple games of the A-Sun. You actually have a play in that conference tournament.
Yeah, I have a little a small play on Lipscomb to win the title at 3-1. It's at DraftKings. They're the better offensive team. Every defense in that conference is pretty much similar. I mean, their strength of schedules are all similar. But Lipscomb can shoot the ball. They're the better offensive team. And if they can get to the finals against Eastern Kentucky, I would say that, I believe it would be on Eastern Kentucky's floor. They would probably be a 2-point underdog, I would think. And maybe you could come back. And if you wanted to monetize that ticket at 3-1, you could probably do something like that. Cause Eastern Kentucky would probably be a small favorite on the money line, probably minus 140, 150, if that's the case. But it's just something that I really like to look at the offensive teams in these tournaments. And we all hear defensive wins championships. Well, the game of college basketball has completely changed over the last 10 years. Yes, you have to have a very good defensive team. But in smaller tournaments like this, I think we were going to take the better offensive team in the conference.
Lipscomb, little sprinkle on Lipscomb there to win the A-Sun, and just to get their exact number at DraftKings, 3-1 right now as we speak. Okay, got 90 seconds left here, Mike. I'm going to ask you the same thing I just asked of Mike Somich here moments ago, which is how many teams legit do you think could win March Madness, and are you dabbling more and more in the Final Four market more than the outrights?
I think we have probably five or six teams that can win it. Teams can play their way into potentially winning the national championship. I have dabbled in the Final Four market. I have BYU at 12-1. I have BYU in every which way for futures. I don't even want to get into that. But they can play offense. Their defense has struggled lately. I have Iowa State, which is an elite defensive team. They're not very good offensively when you look at historical numbers at KenPom to win a national championship. But I think if they have the right matchups, they could make the run to get there. And I want to take Tennessee to get to the Final Four. I'm up to my eyeballs with futures with a lot of these teams. But I'm telling you, Mansamich kind of stole my thunder in the previous segment. Tennessee is the team I really would look at for the best value to win the national championship. They're playing very well, and they have a go-to player, and that's the key. They have a guy that they can rely on to score when they need a basket.
Yeah, I invoked Danny Manning in the Miracles moments ago. It just kind of, he's got that potential, let's put it that way. And that dude's growth spurt, like, he is huge. Dalton Connect we're talking about for Tennessee. Mike, pleasure talking to you, man. I hope to see you here in Vegas soon.
Yeah, hope to be out there for the Final Four. Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Michael Montesano, everybody. Circa Booby Prize winner back in 2021.
Yeah, great.
bizarro sharpness to win the booby.
No, that is
once you make the decision.
We've talked about it a lot. That's a whole other type of skill. It is not easy to do. That is for sure.
Joe Pita thinks like if you're he's like, yeah, just go for the booby. I'm like, I'm not that good at that. Gojo and Golic are next. Enjoy from VSiN, the sports betting network.